Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. We're coming at you from on a Wednesday. Notre Dame had their second practice of the spring, first one in almost 2 weeks. It was good to get back and to talk to coaches Al Washington and Joe Rudolph, offensive linemen, defensive linemen. A lot going on. Notre Dame football practice within the last week. Jerome Bettis Jr. has verbally committed to the Irish in the class of 2025, and then the first member of the class of 2026, Dylan Faison. I want to talk about him a lot. I mainly want to talk about him as a lacrosse player. And then, of course, we had the pot of gold St. Patrick's Day with Notre Dame's offers going out all over the place. International soccer match announced at Notre Dame, women's basketball NCAA tournament this weekend. We got a ton to view and to talk about, but let's start with football practice today. Good to be back on the practice field. Although, unfortunately, we didn't get to see nearly as much as we did 13 days ago with just five periods of football practice. It was a body count today, guys. What do you got?
Yeah, it's a body count on these days, but since we get to talk to coaches afterwards, I think that's a welcome change the last couple of years to put a little context on what we saw. And the body count was relevant today because it's the first time we saw Gabriel Rubio's body since the Sun Bowl. And that means he could work his way back into the fold. I was completely skeptical when he was gone that he would come back no matter what anybody said. This is not a sign that he's back, but it's a good sign, no matter how you look at it.
Not only back, T.O., but as we learned from Jason Onye, back and living with Jason Onye, the roommates, Onye said he's his closest friend on the team, and Onye stressed the overall close-knit, tight nature of the defensive line unit, which he said he believes is the deepest it's been in his entire time at Notre Dame, a sentiment we heard echoed by Al Washington, who said it's now a 300-level course for Notre Dame's defensive line now that they're in year three.
I'd say that the thing that jumped out to me in five periods is I have no idea how Jaden Harrison only had 28 catches for 410 yards last year at Marshall. I just have no idea. And he had 12 catches for 95 yards the year before that.
Remember their quarterback year before that was not that good. So I can guess.
We've covered some not great quarterbacks, and I still think Jaden Harrison would have been way more productive than that at Notre Dame. I think if you just walked in and you removed the jersey numbers, you didn't know who was who out there, and you said that guy is Notre Dame's number one receiver, and it was Jaden Harrison, I wouldn't have a huge argument against that. I just think his short space quickness is really unique. So that was sort of my one takeaway from today that was interesting, other beyond Gabe Rubio being present.
Yeah, and that's how we felt 13 days ago. And he's in the mix. His short space quickness. Funny you should say that, Pete Sampson from The Athletic, because that was kind of what I spent the day while John and Tim were breaking down offense, defense. I was trying to look at all the new guys. Now, there wasn't nearly enough time to do that, but I was trying to do that. And there's some people I want to talk about as we get into this about short space quickness, but I agree. I mean, Jaden Harrison is just a really good football player. He's the fastest of he's the quickest. I don't know if he's the fastest. Maybe Chris Mitchell, like in terms of longer routes, mm-hmm. might be a little bit faster, but no, Jaden Harrison is very good. And he's certainly right in the mix of everything they're doing receiver wise.
Yeah. And I noted this in a practice report and Pete just touched on mm-hmm. it, but his sudden movement, his ability to shake in a very close confined area. I think it's kind of rare for that to stick out in these early practices where we're really not seeing a lot, and where the defensive backs know they're working angles and they're working just a very small segment of the field. And that did not matter today to Jaden Harrison. I can't remember which defender he juked, but he abused a Notre Dame defensive back.
I don't remember who it was either. It was on the double move. And
he
I thought to
Devin
myself,
Ford
I don't know if
real badly.
I don't know if you're allowed to do a double move in that, but I don't care because it looks so cool.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where you're just like, that was awesome, man. He just looks so fast in and out of breaks. And I wanted to point out different situation, but one cut speed, not like Jaden Harrison because he's so low to the ground, but one cut speed, Jaden Greathouse looks faster to me too.
That was what I thought 13 days ago. and continue to, you know, and you get stronger, you get quicker, you're in the program and you have opportunities to get better. Now, Pete Sampson, who else jumped out at you? In addition,
you know, I mean, that was the main one. Cause you know, the rest of it, there was a lot of special teams. You know, I continue to be impressed about how well put together Kedren Young is. I mean, he looks older than a mid-year enrollee. I think you guys probably mentioned this in your instant analysis that Bryce Young, it was nice that Notre Dame was convinced him to come back for his senior year of college. The build there is rare. Notre Dame just doesn't have a whole lot of those. So, I mean, those are the ones. I don't know if there was anything I saw today that made me think anything differently of what we saw a week and a half ago. All four quarterbacks can throw the ball well. We don't need to hyperanalyze anyone's throwing motion or how the ball spins.
It all just looks normal. Pete and I had a long talk about this walking out of the practice. I put in the practice report too. There was a 6-season run at Notre Dame where a highly touted quarterback that we all thought would be good coming in. So let's mea culpa. I thought that these three guys would be good coming into Notre Dame. Threw footballs poorly in practice from 17 to 22, Wimbush, Djurkovic, and Tyler Buchner. And you look down there now and you're like, man, these guys can all throw. And as Pete said, they probably should be able to all throw. But that wasn't the case. It was not the case for years where you look down there and the ball was always coming out correctly.
We do have a question regarding those four quarterbacks in the second segment, so we'll save that. But I mean, you're absolutely right, Tim. Djurkovic went through a huge struggle. We all remember the Brandon Wimbush. Yeah. I remember that my nephew got married that day, and I remember telling him at some point during the evening that, man, you should have seen Brandon Wimbush throw the football tonight or today. But anyway, all very true. And they do throw it very well. Some of the new guys, I mean, Bubakor, I there's some other guys in there that I put on the list. I have like 24 people of the new people that I wanted to really watch. And Traore is, I mean, again, that's another body that like Bryce Young, it just stands out from the other ones.
Yeah. And again, I noted it about Bryce Young. You can see their wingspan. You can just see sort of the way they take up space, but they take up space floating almost. There's just such a natural movement there. And for me, watching Bryce Young really intently, as I noted already in the drills with Al Golden, to see true improvement from one rep to the next as they're working edge contain, as he's eyeing the backfield, keeping some eye discipline and reading the play. That was really impressive. I got to see Max Bulla spending some extra time instructional work with Bubakar Traore, and then Bubakar going outside and working additionally with Al Washington. And yeah, those are the type of guys that frankly, they look like SEC bodies. They look like a guy you might see on the roster at LSU or a Georgia or an Alabama, or even what Michigan and Ohio State have had in some of their defensive spots. They're just a little bit different body type and skill set than what we've seen a lot of in recent years for Notre Dame.
And Micah Gilbert, that's not a freshman body either. That's the way he impressed me 2 weeks ago as well. It speaks to his background, the physical maturity that he has. What I like, Pete, you mentioned Kedren Young, both him and Aeneas Williams, the lower body strength that you see them, you know, just wearing shorts. Those guys come in a little bit advanced in that area. I look at Kedren Young, and I'm not saying that he can be as like bursting through his skin like Audric Estime, but I think that he's going to trend in that direction.
He looks older, and that's not like the room is in such good shape. Like, I'm not in the past, how many times we'd see somebody like Kedren Young come in and be like, ooh, well, I think he might get reps this year. Like, I don't really know where the reps would be for him to get. But both of those guys look like they should be very good college backs down the road. I guess the other one, I don't know if you guys got any clarification. Eli Raerden just sort of very limited, but we don't. I don't have an understanding why yet.
No, I don't think we do either. No, we don't either.
John, do you know anything about that? This weekend, I suppose.
No, I don't. Other than that, they're just still continuing to try to be very deliberate, very methodical in bringing him back. But that's it.
But what is it back? That is, I guess, yeah, the like question what, I thought
he
of today.
Must have some kind of setback. He didn't
started the last four games. That's why I wonder when he's coming back. Well, from.
Maybe it happened in the Sun Bowl and we didn't.
Well, that's true.
Just didn't follow up on it and didn't realize it. I don't know. I mean, I don't.
It could be he could have turned his ankle and it's a ankle sprain and he's not taking part in things.
And just like just so people are clear, like it's not like he's out of uniform. Just when we watch the Titans go through individual indie stuff, he sort of stands to the side. So that's a question for Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, and they were 13 days apart. Like if it happened Monday and Wednesday, you would never expect the guy, but it was March 7th and March 20th. So you would have assumed it, but yeah, he's out there. And it took me the whole practice on March 7th to realize, hey, I didn't see him do a lot because it's not a big deal for one guy not to do a lot in a spring practice. But he's definitely worth asking Freeman about.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. We'll have an opportunity to do that on Saturday. Jerome Bettis Jr., wide receiver, class of 2025, announced his commitment. We anticipated this for weeks and weeks and weeks that it would happen on. did that happen on Saturday? Did that happen on Pot of Gold Day?
I think
it was
Pot of Gold.
Yeah,
that was on Sunday morning. Yeah, I was watching eighth grade volleyball as it was going.
You know, did that interrupt your
it was not great.
Vastly improved from his sophomore year. His inability to get off the line of scrimmage as a sophomore was like, I mean, what are we talking about here? He's come a long, long way. I love his ability to catch a football in 50-50 situations. He just beats the DB to the ball, at least on the high school level. And he's got clamped down hands, and he's really, really good at that. I question his speed. I question his route running. And quite frankly, in watching his film on both sides of the ball, I think there might be more potential for him at safety than there is at wide receiver. But he does catch the contested ball extremely well.
Catching the contested ball, as we said beforehand, I will take over the raw speed because I've seen too many raw speed things not work out. Because raw speed is sometimes attached to, he's really fast and he is raw. Oh, you mean his speed? No, I mean he's raw. And then that just doesn't work out for me. So I like the contested catches.
His route running, though, is...
Yeah, just, that usually has to go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, and it's stop routes and come back to the ball. Anything intricate downfield is just not his forte right now, unless you throw the ball up for grabs and give him a chance to battle a DB. The thing is, though, you've got to have the route running with it and the speed. Because on the next level, those 50-50 balls are a lot more difficult to bring down.
Yeah, I think, you know, watching a little bit of his highlights, he's a developmental take. As long as you get Derek Meadows in the class, there's room for a developmental take. But you've got to get Derek Meadows in the class to go with it.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, you can see there some of the intangibles that he has, the willingness to compete for the ball. And yeah, I think that you have to be able to build your program to where you should be good enough that you're not taking every guy expecting him to play year one. You're taking guys that you expect to be able to develop and turn into contributors and have them maybe year two become a special teams contributor and then growing into a role from there. I think that's the sign of a healthy program. And also I think you're banking on genetics and you're banking on football IQ.
Shortly after that, Notre Dame received a verbal commitment from Dylan Faison, the younger brother, three grades younger than Jordan Faison, class of 2026, just a pup, pretty skinny. I like his football film. I love his lacrosse film, his foot speed, and that shows in football too. But you clearly, and that's probably why Jordan was noticed first as a lacrosse player, Dylan Faison's footwork on the lacrosse field and his creativity around the net, all things that you never would have heard me say a year ago,
but you think
as it relates to lacrosse, but I think he's a sensational lacrosse player.
Pete, do you think those Faison kids got picked last in youth sports when they were growing up with that short space quickness?
Yeah, no. No, I don't think so. As a lacrosse player, I believe, not that I'm into lacrosse recruiting rankings, but I believe he's sort of viewed as like elite of the elite, like higher than Jordan was coming out of high school. And Jordan was very well regarded coming out of high school. So it, seems like a shrewd move by Notre Dame's part. He called it his dream school. Maybe they would just got him on a lacrosse scholarship anyway. But after watching his older brother play and, similar athleticism, you got to think there's something you could work with that's pretty good down the road.
You know, this is all brought out mainly the Bettis commitment. As people take a closer look at the verbal commitments in the class of 2025, I think a lot of critics aren't really impressed with the direction that this class is going. What do you guys think about that?
The 2025 class, I think that they're at 12 three-star prospects on 24/7, which is the same number that they signed all of last year. I think the cycle before they only signed 4 three-star prospects. They're going to have to hit some home runs here, I think, to sort of be in the top 10 ballpark. I realize that people are like, what? They're ranked number one right now. But they're not going to stick there unless you start to see Dallas Golden, Mark Zachary, those kind of prospects come aboard. And as long as they can do that, then I think this class will be fine. I don't see like the same number of top 100 prospects falling Notre Dame's way this cycle as last cycle. So it may take a step down in the team rankings when, signing day comes around.
Yeah, I agree completely, Pete. And also in addition to the fact that there's 12 three-stars and then 6 very highly regarded guys, they also quite frankly have to find a way to hang on to Deuce Knight. And, there's Alabama specifically that is continuing to hammer away at Deuce Knight in addition to Ole Miss as well. But it's not just who you have committed now. It's the guys you have to hang on to, and he is chief amongst those, TP.
Well, Pete, I want to come back to you about Deuce Knight because you recently visited with him. But, Tim, your thoughts on the 2025 class. And before you do that, I think here's part of the problem. Recent commitments from Kia, Jerome Bettis Jr., Ethan Long, Sean Terry, Elijah Burris, but he's way higher than a lot of these are recent commitments. And if you look at the rankings, they're in the bottom portion of this class.
I think Pete's point of, if you're closing with the guys like Zachary and Meadows, then it's trending up. But right now it's not trending in that direction. If you close with, three of your 4 most important targets remaining, then it's a very good class. And I mean, something like Will Black won't be a 3-star forever if we're going on 24/7's rankings. Like, there's some guys like that, but point taken, Pete. If you're gonna have a dozen at one point, a dozen's a lot.
That's a big number.
Yeah. That is a big number. Pete Sampson, you visited with Deuce Knight recently. You and I talked about it the other day when we were in Notre Dame for the announcement of the international soccer match, but physically, he impressed you, did he not?
Yeah, he. I went up to Loosedale, or down to Loosedale, and yeah, he walked into his coach's office, and he fills up the entire door frame. And yet he's still like lean at the same time. Big personality, certainly from a place that's off profile for Notre Dame. His background is not one that you think like, oh yeah, that's a kid that always wanted to go to Notre Dame. In fact, he said that he never liked Notre Dame growing up at all. And, this would be my words, not his, but I think if Marcus Freeman wasn't recruiting him, Notre Dame would have no chance at all with somebody like Deuce Knight. So Notre Dame knows it's going to be a battle the rest of the way with Alabama. I would argue that if Kalen DeBoer didn't replace Nick Saban, Notre Dame would have a much better chance to hang on to him than they do because of the DeBoer connection. And I guess this, I'm going to say who he reminded me of when I saw him physically. And when I say it, you're not going to be able to unhear me saying this, but when I saw Deuce Knight, it reminded me a little bit of how I felt when I saw Jamarcus Russell for the first time at LSU, just how physically impressive he was. The high school version of him, not the junior year of Sugar Bowl Jamarcus Russell, but he is just, Notre Dame doesn't have a quarterback like him on the roster, and saying Notre Dame has never had something like him on the roster is a stretch, because Notre Dame has had a lot of different players, but I can't think of one. I cannot think of a quarterback Notre Dame has had like Deuce Knight ever. So that's why, I mean, he's sort of like I think somebody at 24/7 described him as like a lottery ticket of a prospect. I think that's a great way to put it. Cause he could be like something Notre Dame's never had before, but he is very, very developmental at the same time. And I think it's, you gotta think about both things.
Don't feel bad about making the comparison, because I compared Charles Jagasaw to Aaron Taylor today. Okay. On a couple different fronts. Not saying that he's going to be as good as Aaron Taylor, but we'll talk about that. I think we mentioned that in today's instant analysis. But we're going to wrap up segment one. As I mentioned, Notre Dame women's basketball, number two seed. They play on Saturday. Contingent of basketball fans coming to South Bend. Unfortunately for them, did you see who the number one seed in their bracket is?
Yeah, that's all you're kind of looking to avoid, was having that South Carolina team being the one with them. It's worse than getting the one. It's worse than being the two seed in UConn's bracket in the men's tournament. If you're in women's,
it is. Yep. They're that dominant. Although I wouldn't want to be in UConn's.
No.
We'll get into that segment two when we have questions. Coming back, burning up the boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Annie Davis, and he goes straight to the point of our opening game for Notre Dame football. Texas A&M has one double-digit win season since 1999. With all due respect to Mike Elko and the 12th man, he does not mention Quentin Coriat, which he should have, by the way. Why is this considered a big game?
I didn't know they only had one double-digit winning season since
1999. I didn't either. Was that Manziel, or did they not win double digits with Manziel? They had to.
I thought they had more than one, but they've not won a conference title, I don't think, since 98. I've written about this.
Okay. Well, I don't get it. What Notre Dame could lose if Notre Dame's 0-1 with the schedule they have coming up? It's a massive game. And we all agree playing Mike Elko in his first game is the best time to play a Texas A&M team coached by Mike Elko, but I mean, it's still going to be a formidable environment for Notre Dame to go in and play well. It's huge, because with Notre Dame's schedule, they can't afford to be 0-1.
He is correct. However, they had an 11-2 year under Kevin Sumlin in 2012, and then
Manziel. There we go.
A whole bunch of 9-1 seasons, and then.
I mean,
a bunch of 9-win seasons.
Yeah,
I got the wrong year.
They're very good in the COVID year. I'm sure that would have been a 10-win season. It just, they only played 11 games.
Only played 10 games. I think they had one canceled because of COVID.
I guess I get where Annie Davis is coming from here, but it's still. Well, Texas A&M on the road to open the season.
Yeah, there's a couple of things at play here. Number one, it's a big game in terms of how we're, you know, Notre Dame has like four big games, and starting 0-1 is really bad. It takes you until Louisville week 5, which may not have the punch it needs, and then not until November for a big game for Notre Dame to make a giant splash. Number two, it's not considered a big game only by us, because Texas A&M is favored in the game by 1.5 right now. So it's a big game to other people too. It's a tough situation. I'm glad Mike Elko is not game 11, but opening with Mike Elko on the road isn't the greatest thing either. Opening at A&M isn't the greatest thing either. You wouldn't mind them starting out maybe 1-2 and then playing against them. But that's a tough game, man, as evidenced by the point spread.
Yeah, look, the A&M has finished ranked 5 times since 2000. I'm not comparing this game to opening at Ohio State. Saying it's that. But compared to other road openers, this is a really difficult road opener.
It was a 14-point underdog at Ohio State. They're a 1.5-point underdog here, but it's still tough.
So this is a difficult game. That doesn't but it's not as difficult as Ohio State last year. So yeah, I guess it just depends on what your perception is of how good this is compared to other games that Notre Dame is opening, because it's very difficult big picture. It's just not as difficult as Ohio State, which was, or at Georgia, you know, which was not an opener, but early on in terms of a marquee one-off home and home, this is a good one, but it's not Georgia. It's not Ohio State. And that's fine. I just wouldn't chalk it up as like, well, Notre Dame should, or is supposed to win this game. It's a toss up kind of game.
I think there's a huge swing here. Like Georgia and Ohio State wouldn't be as bad of a swing as opening at A&M versus A&M coming to Notre Dame. You would fully expect Notre Dame to handle A&M coming to Notre Dame. Whereas Georgia or Ohio State's coming to Notre Dame, you don't fully expect Notre Dame to handle that good of a program. But going to A&M makes it tough. I mean, it's like a trouble spot when we do those things in the summer. That's trouble.
And it's fully expected to be a night game. And yes, A&M has lost a number of players to the transfer portal. But for all that Jimbo Fisher screwed up in College Station, he and his staff recruited extremely well. So again, they've lost a significant number of guys. Walter Nolan, who's an elite defensive tackle, lost a great wide receiver, lost several other players. But they still had a lot of really good players on that roster. They've made additions through the transfer portal. They've got Colin Klein running the offense now, which, as we all know, Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman tried to have him running their offense in February of 2023. So subplots, but also coaches that you respect. You've seen firsthand what Mike Elko almost did last fall with the Duke roster that isn't as good as this Texas A&M roster.
Yeah, and for a little bit of perspective, well, first of all, the game's last day of August, so it could be extremely hot, extremely humid. From 2018 to 2021, Texas A&M was 21-4 at home. It can be a difficult place to play. I don't think it has been per se the last couple of years. But I think there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek with the question being asked by Eddie Davis, too, as well. But, yeah, I mean, it can't be 0-1. That's the main thing. Question from Scott, 24105. With Jaden Osbury seemingly on the verge of breaking out to go with all the other talented linebackers, and with the question marks about the nickel starter, do you see a chance that Notre Dame plays with the Rover a lot more this season, kind of like what they did with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah a few years ago?
I asked this question, and I almost said Max Bulla and Coach Bulla. I said Max Bulla. I almost said Chuck Bulla. I'm sorry. And Max Bulla said, you know, the way the sport is now, nickel is the thing. Nickel is what they are looking to do. And I like Jaden Osbury more than most. Maybe JB and I are the same on that in terms of our level of liking a guy. Priester as well. Pete's liked him. I had him number two in the class. I thought about this in December and January. A coach kind of shot it down, and I don't like putting Osbury in the Rover JOK situation. Like that, I don't believe. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is a unique athlete out there, and I think Osbury could be a unique will linebacker athlete, not the Rover that stays on the field for 700 snaps like JOK. I mean, Pete, you point out once in a practice, he was mirroring Chris Finck in the slot. There's no linebacker Notre Dame mirroring Chris Finck in the slot right now.
No, Owusu-Koramoah, like the DNA there was quite unique. I mean, he was like the muscles on muscles guy. But to this question, by the end of his sophomore year, he hadn't done anything.
Yep.
You know, he missed his first 2 years. Jaden Osbury going into his second year. So I think Osbury has a chance to be a very good college player. I think as soon as Owusu-Koramoah got on the field, you had a chance. You thought like, this guy is probably going to be a pro. And I'm, you know, but check back a year or 2 years from now on Osbury. Maybe we'll have a better idea.
He was not listed as a Rover either by Bulla or as of now. Like they're looking at him a lot of places. His base defense Rover was Snead. And then,
he didn't mention him as a swing guy.
A swing guy, yeah.
Okay.
His base, but if your base is Snead, and this is, of course, as of pre practice, if your base is somebody and you're regular Rover is technically your nickel, he's not one of your first Rover options because the nickel's the Rover option.
Yeah, I agree. And we're two practices into spring camp. They're being very judicious with a couple of guys as they bring them slowly along. They're obviously not the same position, but it'll be part of the dynamics, waiting on Hurd to be involved. And so I just think there are too many things at play there to say it's definitely going to be more Rover or more this. But I think what sticks out to me and continues to stick out to me is that there are more options for Notre Dame to explore and more candidates to, with better versatility, to potentially fill some of these roles.
And I want to, you know, Jaden Ausbury, he's one of the guys listed, like 25 guys. I want to try to, I wish I would have done that actually.
25 guys in 40 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just impossible, but you saw me, T.O. I mean, I wasn't talking a whole lot and I had binoculars and I was trying to catch everything I could. Jaden Ausbury is a unique talent. He just is. And the thing that I wrote down about him was he has another gear. There's the first step out of a backpedal or the first step out of moving forward to make a play is executed at a degree of quickness and speed that is different than other players out there. I think that that's also true of KVA as well, mm-hmm. not to the extent of Ausbury. You know, Jaden Harrison in a different way on the offensive side of the ball. I think we see that same thing with him, but I really like Ausbury. I mean, I think he's more likely to do damage from the will linebacker spot, whereas Jalen Sneed's more of a guy coming off the edge. But L. Golden does a lot of things with his linebackers. I'm just really excited about Tim. You said it the last time or podcast before that, you know, it's just time to look at, to see different linebackers. Yeah. And there's just such a, you know, Drake Bowen. And I mean, these guys are such unique talents. Kingston Viliamuasa and Jaden Ausbury. That's the next group of linebackers that I think are really going to stand out for Notre Dame.
As I run to get my cord to plug in and avoid this low battery thing that the amateur hour has produced in my right part of my screen, I'm going to read this to you guys first. 1689 Golden Domer. All the rumors swirling about the upcoming transfer portal madness. Will Notre Dame be directly affected positively, negatively, or indirectly if future opponents improve and worsen?
Maybe you guys have a different perspective on this than I do, but I mean, I don't, other than I don't think any of us from Notre Dame's perspective want to see Steve Angeli leave at the end of spring practice. And maybe I'm just not, that hasn't really been something at the forefront of my mind about when spring's over, well, they might lose this guy, this guy, this guy. But I don't know anybody really. Help me out here because it isn't anything that I've given a whole lot of thought to. And I'm not sure if I'm skipping over some players and I shouldn't be doing that.
I mean, every spring right now with the portal has been different. This one is going to be different because it's shorter, as we've discussed mm-hmm. ad nauseum. It's just a 15-day portal at the end of spring, as opposed to what it has been in previous years, which I think was closer to 30 days at the conclusion of spring or 45. So it's just April 15th through the 30th or something like that, I believe, maybe just April 15th through the 29th that it's going to be open. There will be attrition from Notre Dame. There will be opportunity for Notre Dame to get into the portal and find some guys. I know a lot of people are asking about offensive line. I talked to two different coaches at different programs around the country within the past week. And I asked them about their offensive lines. And I said specifically to an offensive coordinator yesterday, I said, so you're going to get somebody in the portal. And he said, well, hell, who isn't trying to get somebody in the portal on the offensive line?
Yeah.
And so I think that gives you an idea of the premium being placed on that position right now and how difficult it's going to be. Also, as we discussed on instant analysis, I think there's growing optimism, particularly about the interior guard, center guard of what Notre Dame is accomplishing this spring on the offensive line. And we'll continue to see the development of Jagasaw and Tosh Baker and Wagner and others who potentially impact there. I don't sit here and fret about who Notre Dame might lose in the transfer portal because guys aren't going into the portal if they've carved significant roles over the course of the next month. They're just not going to.
I think as long, like, one, you want to avoid Angeli if you can. But then on top of that, like, as long as you don't have like a Logan Diggs situation, I think you can pretty much live with it. Like, of all the, I think they lost 11 guys last year. If you can avoid a Diggs and a Buckner being Angeli, I think that the other nine guys, you'd be like, that's fine. You'd roll with if you were Notre Dame. Like Joe Wilkins, Jaden Bellamy, like that type of transfer, which is by and large, like that's the kind of transfers Notre Dame lose. I think Notre Dame would be okay with that. But just don't have it be like, you know, like Jeremiah Love or something like, well, that would be your, yeah, Logan Diggs parallel. Like, just like, whoa, didn't see that coming. Like something like that. As long as you can avoid that, I think that you'll probably take it as a win if you're Notre Dame.
I would add, you can't have another Prince Kali type transfer at that position because you don't have enough players in that position to lose anyone up and coming at that spot. They were cool losing Prince Kali last year because he was already going to leave before spring practice started. But you know who the Prince Kali would be this year if he's going to leave. You can't have that happening to your team right now. There's not enough players.
Well, like if you're concerned about, and I hate to single people out, but I mean some of the fringe guys like Tyson Ford or Ty Chan or Deion Colsey or Chance Tucker or Aiden Gobira
that's not my Prince Kali situation though.
No, there's a list on Tui Alamaka, you know, has been passed up a little bit. I mean, if those names concern you, well, you know, that could happen. I don't know, an offensive lineman. I think it's, well, either
that will happen. I mean, they're going to lose some of those names because you have to. First of all, they have 90 players, so you're going to lose some of those names. Oh, I guarantee it. but
who would they be? Because you're either an upperclassman competing for playing time, or you're so young you haven't been given a shot yet. I don't know. I mean,
the names you mentioned, they're losing some guys. They are definitely losing some guys, yeah, just because that always should happen. I don't think he's asking that, though. I think he's asking.
No, I'm not anticipating, but like you guys said, I mean, Diggs, and I think we knew Buckner was a possibility, certainly, but I don't see a rash of players leaving here where you're like, oh, damn, they really needed him. Angeli's the one that you'd like to see stick around, because I think there's some real upside there that's developed in the last 12 months.
I find the QB situation so interesting, and we have a question for that, so we could probably move on to that question. But Pete, just very quickly, do you know what I mean? Like Prince Kali was the only junior; he'd be the only senior linebacker on the team. They don't have a senior linebacker. The only junior is Jalen Snead. If you lose Jalen Snead,
okay, that's who I figured you were.
You lose Jalen Snead, and you have all redshirt freshmen and Jack Kaiser, and you have four redshirt freshmen and Jack Kaiser. You don't have enough players. You need a guy like think of Snead in another position. It would hurt, but it would hurt a lot more at the linebacker position.
Yeah, but then Jaden Osbury would play Rover a lot.
But when one guy gets hurt and it's over. Like, that's the whole, I mean, this is a Chauncey Stuckey conversation we're about to have here. Oh, we have three linebackers. All right, great. Good for you.
I mean, we can't. Back to a previous question there. But, yeah, well, let's, in light of that, let's move on to the next question from Dr. Earl 9. Are the four Notre Dame quarterbacks really good, or is this an overreaction after having 5'9" Drew Pine at the helm? There was more to the question. It was a commentary, but that was the question.
Well, now I want to know.
Well, it was just he didn't enjoy it. Let's just say he did not enjoy watching Drew Pine play quarterback.
That's fair.
I think all four quarterbacks are legitimate college players, or will be legitimate college players. Like, it'll be interesting to if we're still doing this podcast in 4 years, how many total starts did Riley Leonard, CJ Carr, Steve Angeli, and Kenny Minchie have between now and then? Because I bet all four will start a game somewhere at some point.
They'll be power five, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're losing Brendan Clark to Old Dominion and Drew Pine to delusions of grandeur, and Tyler Buckner to the craziest decision, outside of money, in the history. Well, see, as Nick Saban was right, chasing money. If you're losing guys where they can't play and can't compete, it's different. I mean, Kenny Minchie's going to play somewhere if he leaves Notre Dame. CJ Carr would play somewhere. Riley Leonard was a junior. He would, and Angeli beat him out. He'd play somewhere, and Steve Angeli will play somewhere. That's a great point.
Tim, you could have given me 30 guesses as to where Brendan Clark went, and I wouldn't have guessed. Maybe 50.
Well, somebody brought up on our board that he said, O'Malley, you wrote a story once about Notre Dame quarterbacks transferring. Can you find it? And I wrote that in 2011, by the way, so I couldn't find it. However, off the top of my, it's just that every single quarterback competition Notre Dame's ever had since 1980, when I look back, ends in transfer. So it has nothing to do with the transfer portal. It's just easier to transfer now. Well, if you lose the quarterback job at Notre Dame, you transfer.
Yeah.
End of story. There's no arguing it. It's been proven. So I looked up Brendan Clark, and he went to Old Dominion. That's why.
Well, and look how many. Well, and Clark's from that area and had the injury and all that. But look how many quarterbacks transferred through the years out of Alabama's program under Nick Saban, or how many have done so in recent years from the University of Georgia. I mean, it's the position that there really is no rotation almost whatsoever, except for the handful of coaches that will deploy a two quarterback system with different skill sets. So you have to transfer to play, especially if you're close in age. I think to the point of the question, with them asking, is it just being skewed by maybe what we've seen from the quarterback position in recent years? I would say no. Like what we've seen, you guys have made the best point talking about how many bad footballs you saw thrown on the practice field from 2017 forward. So I think because you've seen so many bad footballs thrown out on the practice field, and now we're not seeing those bad footballs thrown, I think that gives you an indication that Notre Dame has clearly elevated its quarterback room to probably one through four. I would say it's top five in the country.
So I'm going back to 84 because I just did this on Friday. I think from about 84 on, and the two, by the way, I don't know why I did 84, because two guys transferred in like 83 and 82. So I could have kept going back, just made it obvious. But I think it's 33 of the, let's see, 33 of the 47, 33 of the 47 quarterbacks Notre Dame signed transferred.
Unreal.
33 of 37?
It was 23 of 30. It was 23 of 33. No, of 47, Pete. It was 23 of 33, and then it was 10 of the next 14. And I'm not including a current quarterback at all, obviously, because he can't, you know, one of them won't be at Notre Dame at some point.
Well, as it relates to the question, I mean, we don't, I mean, I can't ever remember evaluating a quarterback based upon a previous quarterback. This is all done at face value. Drew Pine has nothing to do with anything as far as our evaluation of these quarterbacks. It's watching quarterbacks and determine whether they can deliver the football like a major college quarterback. And these four guys can do that.
And if the fourth guy couldn't, we would be like, obviously noting that guy doesn't deliver the football like those three quarterbacks do.
It's not a thing. It's just simply evaluating a player.
Yeah. I just remember on Drew Pine, there was a training camp throw where he rolled right and he hit somebody for a touchdown. And I was like, oh, that was a really nice throw. Like, good on Drew Pine. I don't think I would even note that if any of these other four quarterbacks did the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, well, duh, they obviously are going to make that throw. They're all like legit big time college quarterbacks. So that I think is that's maybe gets to Dr. Earl Nine's question here is just like, it's fun to take it for granted that these quarterbacks can all just make the throw.
We have next question.
Is a good one. Go ahead, Tim.
Need a turnover. And the question is, who are Notre Dame's best offensive and defensive players in space? Good question. Unique question.
Yeah. Offense, I can name a lot. As Pete's guy, Jaden Harrison, already looks like one of the best in space. Jordan Faison has proven to be pretty good in space, actually. If the short space turning into long space count, because Jadarian Price would be one of the best in space. Those three immediately come to mind.
Jeremiah Love.
Jeremiah Love, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are my four offensive guys, Tim.
Yeah, those are absolutely my four offensive guys. And then, we just haven't seen enough of Chris Mitchell yet to see. He could potentially be one of those guys. Defensively, my first thought is Ben Morrison and what he did, the ground that he covers, the interception we saw 13 days ago, the fact that his nine picks last 2 years, I think I saw a stat this week, are the most from any cornerback in college football. He plays very well in space. They're not there yet, but as we've already alluded to in this podcast, it's going to be extremely exciting to continue to see the development of Boubacar Traore and Bryce Young playing in space because of their frames and all the characteristics we outlined. They look like they can be special on the edge. They look like they're going to have that chase down ability. So that's sort of, and then you hope it, if you're Notre Dame, you hope Jalen Snead emerges.
Yeah, that's
guy that's really exciting for you in space.
I think that's what he's good at, is in space. I think Jalen Snead can really move when there's some lateral space to cover and attacking.
I hesitated to put his name down, knowing that, like, when I thought in space, in terms
of coverage
dropping, that's not it. But I mean, in space, coming off the edge, no doubt about it.
And attacking the perimeter, probably, right, Tim? Like,
No doubt. Jaden Osbury's a name I wrote down, and that was before practice today. Xavier Watts, just because of his ability back there to find the football.
Christian, he has a magnet that makes it elite, that makes it less
legal. No doubt. It's easier to say this with offensive players, of course, and then, you know, defensive players, generally speaking, you're looking at the far back end of the defense when you talk about players in space.
Yeah, I agree. Jaden Harrison, Benjamin Morrison, those would be my guys.
So at the end of the year, if we add Christian Gray, then they're going to have quite a defense.
Thought about it. Yeah, thought about it. It's just like, you know, if you're a defensive player, you kind of don't want to play in space, because usually that means you're kind of in an awkward one-on-one tackle situation that you don't want to be in. But, you know, it's like Morrison certainly can improve as a tackler.
DBs
Gray, I think, might more natural ability. So
DBs can't avoid some of those.
Yeah. That's just how it goes. I would say there's nothing, getting back to Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah for a second, that's a defensive player in space.
it's hard to find
people like that, where it's like, if it was a one-on-one in space when he was in it, you're like, ah, screwed. There's nobody on Notre Dame's defense that sort of gives me that similar vibe.
Kyle Hamilton in space. Yeah. And they were on opposite sides of the Notre Dame defense in 2020.
Jeez.
Would have been nice. That's because that Alabama team cared more about winning, though, than the money, so they beat Notre Dame. Coach Aguilar, I have read that Coach Biagi is an above-average recruiter, and he should be an above-average coach for the safety room. First, is that a correct assessment? And if so, will we see an immediate impact in both safety play as well as recruiting this fall? I want to throw in quickly, safety play was really, really, really good under the last position coach.
That's my reaction. We can put this to rest right now. He's not a better safeties coach than Chris O'Leary. Chris O'Leary has been in demand from the NFL for several years, so I don't know that that's going to get better. I can it get better than the development of Xavier Watts last year? I'm making fun of you, Coach Aguilar, and I apologize for that. But, you know, I mean, I think it remains to be seen how much of an impact Marty Biagi has on the safeties. I still think that Mike Mickens' impact on the four positions will be greater than Marty Biagi's at safety. Is it fair to say that? I don't really know.
I don't know. I think it's early. Now look, O'Leary is elite. I mean, the guy is a supreme coach who's been approached a number of times, not just by the NFL, but other programs in recent years. And there's a reason he's now in the NFL. I think that Notre Dame has the potential for better safety play in the fall, because Xavier Watts has said everything moved fast for him last year, and he still was the Bronco Nagurski winner who had a phenomenal campaign and became an All-American, and he came back to get even better. And then there's extreme optimism about Hurd's arrival. So, yeah, you might get better safety play as much because of the two players that you're going to have out there and what they bring to the table. I don't think anybody can outwork Marty Biagi, and especially on the recruiting trail, he's had some wild trips where he's had to see a guy maybe in the South and then fly to LA and then fly to Hawaii and then be back 36 hours later. So he's a relentless worker. He's already fostering some relationships with some of the safeties, particularly some of the younger guys. But yeah, Chris O'Leary is absolutely elite, but your Jimmys and Joes give you a chance to have better safety play this fall.
Yeah, I think who starts next to Watts could be better than DJ Brown last year.
Was that Rod Hurd that we saw there today?
Yes.
That was him.
I believe so, yeah. So, but
he looks like he has some length.
Yeah, and he's been around.
Just like if Marty Biagi could be an above average safety coach, but that would make him two steps down or three steps down from O'Leary. and that's okay. But that room should be good. I think the story of that room is less about Biagi and more about how good Rod Hurd is relative to DJ Brown.
And you know what? Let's be fair to the question. If we go read it a little differently, so the safety recruits Chris O'Leary was working with was converted corner DJ Brown, converted corner athlete Ramon Henderson, Northwestern transfer Brandon Joseph. He got Northwestern transfer Rod Hurd, preferred walk-on Luke Talich, wide receiver recruit Xavier Watts. So the recruiting could pick up very much if Marty Biagi is an effective recruiter, because they develop safeties great. They only had one guy that you said, wow, when he came in, it was Kyle Hamilton. I mean, Alohi Gilman, Navy transfer, Jalen Elliott, I know this wasn't O'Leary, but think of Notre Dame safety recruiting versus development. Navy transfer, Northwestern transfer, Northwestern transfer, college or high school quarterback and Jalen Elliott. All these guys, other than Kyle Hamilton, were not highly thought of. I guess Houston Griffith was.
Let me say this. If Tay Johnson develops especially quickly, then huge kudos to Marty Biagi about that. And JB, I'm glad that you added insight like that. I'm not trying to rip on him, nor am I trying to rip on Coach Aguilar, who has had a couple questions here.
No, that's why I thought like the safety recruiting does need an uptick. O'Leary developed players over time. That you did a great job, but you don't recruit Xavier Watts to become your starting safety. It was he stuck around Notre Dame. Thank goodness. He could have been gone. They moved him back and forth.
Oh man. Yeah. Thank God.
He's an all time. When people say Notre Dame men, Notre Dame football program, he's a program player that won the Nagurski Award.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We got a couple questions here that we tied together. One from ND Dan 106. It seems like Audric Estime running a 4.71 at the combine really hurt him. Does Kyren Williams' NFL performance help Estime, or do you think he goes undrafted like some insiders are speculating? And then a second question from Wash ND, with Notre Dame's Pro Day coming up, which, by the way, is tomorrow, Thursday. Who do you think could gain the most with a great workout? I would go with Audric, not me, ND, Wash ND. I would go with Audric Estime and Thomas Harper.
Second question first. I agree with Estime. I think he's the key. But JD Bertrand didn't get to run, and I was waiting to see how fast he was going to run at that combine. So I want to see if he can run. What are we, 4 weeks removed, 3 weeks removed from the boot? I don't know why he had the boot on. We don't know. So he needs to run, because we've always been told how fast he is. We have a couple films of him chasing down people. There were sprinters in Mississippi, right, Pete? We talk about that all the time.
Yes.
So I want to see him run a good time if he can do it. Harper needs a great, Harper would need to have a fantastic workout.
I think it's, I agree with Estime, and Harper needs to work out. I think Blake Fisher, he probably has the most to gain if he can have a strong showing on Thursday. That for me would be the three guys who immediately come to mind. I would be surprised if Audric Estime ends up undrafted. We all know him well. He's going to interview well. He does a lot of things well. And there's just different roles for different backs and body types now in the NFL. But he needs to improve his time, and tomorrow is key for that regard.
Yeah, I think Blake Fisher is the right guy in terms of the most to gain. Because I don't know if Audric Estime is going to change a whole lot of perceptions based on Pro Day. He's got a ton of tape. Either you like him or you don't. Bertrand, ton of tape. Like him or you don't. I think Thomas Harper, good college player, but probably not someone who's athletically moving the needle. And there are a lot of Thomas Harpers out there, but Blake Fisher, there are not a lot of Blake Fishers out there, but he's got to show more in the workout than maybe he did in Indianapolis. And, you know, give you reason to look at the tape and be like, yeah, is the tape maybe wasn't great, but these workout numbers are, I'll take a chance on somebody like that.
Javonte Jean-Baptiste had the all-star game that he missed time with, and then the combine that he missed time with. So I think he has really good tape from last season.
Yeah.
But it's a big pro day for him. Blake Fisher, definitely. Thomas Harper, Pete, I'm not sure there are a bunch of Thomas Harpers out there. Now,
was just going to say, Notre Dame needs
to
go.
Are we going to a wager? Are we going to a wager already on this?
No. Yes, but not with him. Not with him. I know it's not a Tariq Bracey bet, but How much? Like, you name the price, and I will bet that Audra Kesme is going to go undrafted.
No, that's what I said. That was my point. No way.
Who said that? Who said that? What draft expert said that he might go undrafted because he ran a 4.71? Did you see his season? That's ridiculous.
There's no way 32 teams can't
use Audric
Estime.
There's no way that Audric Estime goes undrafted. Now, I'm not
saying around either. There's no way a smart team doesn't take Audric Estime in the seventh round of the draft. It's impossible.
He doesn't make it to the seventh round.
I know, but it's impossible. Somebody does look down and go, well, we might as well add him because he's going to beat out three of our running backs the second he walks to the door. That's...
You can take that 4.7. Oh, you mean, so you're going to put more weight on this one, this 4.71 seconds in time. You're going to put more weight on that than what he did. Take a look at somebody put out a compilation. It was on Twitter or something, a compilation of his runs from this season. It was absolutely remarkable. I easily think that Audric Estime will overcome the 4.71. Will he run again at Pro Day?
Yes, he should. Yes, he should. Kyron Williams did, and he proved it. Yeah,
he probably will. And that is a NFL football player, man. I don't. There's just no way that he goes undrafted.
I can't believe Pete left him off his mock draft. That was not cool, Pete. For your seven round mock draft you had up there.
Yeah.
I do think he needs to run again, though. It's a bad idea if that's it. I'm going 4.71. I'm going to keep that up there.
I agree. I think he will. I think he should. I think he will.
Next question from Caden MC. Joel Klatt reacted to Nick Saban's comments about players being concerned only with playing time and money by saying it was part of the reason Michigan beat Alabama and won it all. I did not see that, thankfully. Do you see an opportunity for Notre Dame in this college football moment for similar reasons? Is Marcus Freeman fostering a similar culture?
I almost feel guilty if I say no. You know, I mean, Caden.
I'll
MC
say no for you.
Caden MC is hoping so badly to make the no, but I get it. And Tim, you keep bringing up like Saban's comment about Alabama players. What are you saying?
No, I'm sure it's true, but like you blame it after the fact. Well, I knew we couldn't win. They want money more than they want to win. They wanted to win too. They were pissed when they lost and they want money.
You're paraphrasing what he said.
I don't think Nick said that about them losing. He said that's what he is dealing with the portal after the season and recruiting and all that. I think Alabama lost that game because it couldn't hold a late lead and because J.J. McCarthy made superior plays and because Alabama had some holes on its offensive line when it could have put the game away. I also think Alabama had some mental breakdowns and a couple of late penalties, if I'm not mistaken. That's the team that Nick Saban said might have improved the most of any that he had. Let's remember, they lost by 10 at home early in the year to Texas, and then were relatively lucky to beat a first-year USF in its first year under Alex Golish in a rainy, nasty game that they only won 17-3. So I just think Michigan built its roster for a really long time. It was one of the oldest teams in college football. J.J. McCarthy is going to be a first-round quarterback, a first-round draft pick at quarterback. Jalen Milroe is not. Those to me are the reasons. So I don't, and this is not unusual, I don't agree with Joel Klatt. And also, I do think Marcus Freeman has an incredibly healthy culture, and we heard talk about it today. So I don't know that means it's a golden opportunity, because until this market gets some guardrails, until it sort of corrects itself, it's going to be wide open, Wild West. But I do give Marcus Freeman tremendous credit for the culture.
Pete Sampson, is Marcus Freeman fostering a similar culture?
Is this similar? Are we similar to Michigan or similar? Then yes. Yeah, I think so. The way that Michigan was constructed was they did a great job last year of having an old team stay. And I think if you look at Notre Dame this year, it's an old team that stayed. Kizer, Mills, Cross, Watts. That's I think how Notre Dame is going to win, but I think that's how Notre Dame was going to win in the previous decade and the decade before that. They needed to have like everyone come back for a year and be old. And they are an incredibly old team on defense. Their staff is old in terms of, you know, Golden's, you know, third year here. So yeah, I think that what Harbaugh did at Michigan last year and what Freeman is doing at Notre Dame this year, I think they could have some similarities to it. I don't think Notre Dame's offensive line is where Michigan's was last year, but of the age of the roster, there's some things that I think Notre Dame can replicate.
Caden MC, I was just joking with you because my answer to is Marcus Freeman fostering a similar culture. Yeah, I think he absolutely is. My problem or concern is that I'm not sure that Marcus Freeman's Jim Harbaugh as a head coach. I mean, especially at where Jim Harbaugh, evolved to by the 2023 season. I don't think that Marcus Freeman is there, but a similar culture. Yeah, I think that's a good question from the standpoint that the buy-in is really, really high. And obviously, you know, the reason Michigan beat Alabama in the playoffs is because Michigan was better. I mean, they were a better football team.
That's what my point is. I don't think like Alabama's culture is terrible because the players want money in NIL after games. Nick Saban recruited all the best players and he dealt with it for a long time. And now someone want to be paid. Notre Dame's guys want to be paid too. If Notre Dame wasn't paying players through NIL, their culture wouldn't be great.
It's
100%.
I'm defensive of some of the attacks on Saban because I think that they're unfair. He wasn't, you know, and then immediately it's like, you know, how much money he makes and all in this and that. That's not the point. Nick Saban doesn't need to go before Congress and try to help save college football, but he did. I think the reasons for saying and doing what he did were genuine. But
I'm saying he said the first thing he said to his wife was this, the first thing they're asking for is how much money they're going to make. Well, that's because you've been paying them.
No, I get that. But here's a guy that is accustomed to having control of his football team and being able to dictate how much they win. And factors like that erode the team concept.
I'm not denying it, but Michigan had NIL and they had a wonderful team concept.
I get that. But I mean, Nick Saban didn't say I lost those games because of this.
Obviously I'm hyperbole when this is going, but like Michigan pays their players through NIL funds and has a wonderful team concept.
They do. And Harbaugh created, fostered the culture that Caden MC is talking about that Notre Dame is developing.
When it's been 25 years since you've won a national title versus having 6 and 12 years or whatever it was for Alabama, it's a little easier to have that real healthy culture where everybody wants to be the breakthrough team that finally wins.
That's the point too.
Whereas at Alabama, and I've seen it firsthand, if they've lost a second game in a season, students leave at halftime or don't show. The tickets drop to nothing. And one more thing on Nick Saban, to your point, TP, he's been very vocal about and publicized how much Bryce Young made when he was the Alabama quarterback because he was a proven commodity. That's his thing. And people want to zero in on Nick Saban. Nobody's had better comments than Deion Sanders, who has said what company out there wants to align itself with a 16 or 17 year old player for $500,000 or $1 million when you don't know how this player is going to be, when you don't know if he's going to translate, if you don't know he's going to have the character that you want to represent your company. That's why Deion said it's not NIL, it's pay for play. And Nick Saban didn't just brashly say he hates pay for play, but that was his point.
All right, I do have to bring this up because Nick Saban said this great thing about Bryce Young. In 2023, in 2021, Nick Saban said our quarterback has approached ungodly numbers and he hasn't played it down yet. If you ask me what it is, I think it's almost seven figures. I can't get over that.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Saban gets paid the bucks that he does because he's a proven commodity. He didn't make what he was in his early years as a head coach. He didn't make. Anything near, obviously, to what he's making now. Anyway, guys, I'd like to pick up the pace here with a little bit of a flourish because we've been going on from Oofoof 8. Who will be the leading tackler with J.D. Bertrand gone?
Jack Kaiser next. No, I'm kidding.
Jack Kaiser for me
as well. I mean, because of his tackles per snaps up to this point are so off the chart that you would think that it would translate.
I'm trying to get creative and think of somebody other than Jack Kaiser, but I can't.
Okay. So usually a safety is second, and you're not going to say Xavier Watts that more than Jack Kaiser. So
I wanted to be like Howard Cross, but like that seems.
Yeah. And boy, if it's a safety, then those interior defensive linemen are doing their job, and we're pretty sure that they'll be able to do that.
Pete's still thinking about Thomas Harper.
Yes.
Question from Buzz0711. Coach, Marcus Freeman wants to know from you guys, who should be the first five players off the bus in College Station?
Riley Mills, for sure. And then after seeing him today, probably Jason Onye. Riley Leonard for me. And then those are my top three. And then, you know, I think Jadarian Price cuts a very imposing figure. And then you can pick somebody beyond that.
Riley Mills is the most imposing figure on the team. Yeah. I'd say, Tosh Baker.
Tosh Baker would be on my list. Yeah. Riley Mills is an easy first right? The first guy you write down.
Yes. Yeah.
Riley Mills.
Number one overall pick.
He's kind of got that. I don't know that, you know, you got to look at the whole frame. I don't know if that baby face necessarily intimidates anybody.
No, BK put Robbie Toma off the bus first for the championship game against Alabama. Do you remember that?
Why did he do that?
He was the first guy to walk in. Robbie Toma was the guy that walked in off the thing.
Oh.
So Jordan Faison could go off the bus real fast.
Yeah. I'd say
Eli Raritan.
I'd say Eli Raritan, yeah. Mitchell Evans. I mean, I don't know that there's Jalen Snead is a guy that I think Jaden Thomas to a large extent, among receivers certainly.
I put Xavier Watts down for me. Watts, Price, Mills, Raritan, Evans. I feel like that'd be a fine first five off the bus.
Like I think JJB last year would have been the case. I wouldn't say that about RJ Oben. They're built differently.
I'm sure we're a bit slanted because we've seen him play so much, but like Benjamin Morrison, the way he carries himself, you're kind of like, you have to be good.
Yeah.
So if you want to have Benjamin Morrison come off the bus, like, I don't know. There's just something the cut of that guy's jib makes me think that he's really, really good.
Might be the arm length.
Yeah.
And just super quick here, since Pete just referenced Eli Raritan, I sent some texts over the course of the podcast, and I continue to be told it's just extremely precautionary measures with Eli Raritan.
That sounds good. That's good news. We're going to wrap up with a little bit of men's basketball. Question from Judge Arthur Vandelay. Who do each of you have in a Final Four men's basketball, and then winning the whole thing?
I have an incredibly boring bracket of all number one seeds and Purdue winning it. So it's Purdue.
Ooh, that is boring. Jeez.
North Carolina, Houston, and UConn. So, and then Purdue beats UConn in the final. So just terrible. Just a terrible. I hate it. I hate everything about it, but that's what I have.
I have, I think the second best team in the country plays UConn in the Sweet 16. I would have Auburn going to the championship game in any other bracket, but I do have UConn beating Auburn. So I have UConn, Tennessee, North Carolina, and then I just refuse to trust Arizona. Absolutely. Absolutely refuse to trust Arizona.
25 years of not trusting Arizona.
So I would either not fill it in. I would rather pick no one than to pick Arizona there. I would leave it blank because I just believe they'll lose somewhere. But I don't really think I believe in Baylor either. So I'm just going to go with the old flyer and go with New Mexico.
What?
New Mexico's good. New Mexico can play.
I know. I saw them play the other night. They're very good. John, who
I
do
don't
you have?
Figure I can't picture Arizona winning all the games they need to get there. I would leave it blank. I'm just going to leave it blank. That has to happen. Not a protest.
I think UConn repeats. I'm with you, Tim. I think that Auburn would be a Final Four team. I would probably have Auburn as a Final Four team in any bracket aside from UConn. And anyone who knows how long I covered Bruce Pearl knows that it pains me to say that.
To say that, yeah. You're not homering right now.
No. You can read my Twitter feed and know I'm not.
JB, he must have been a joy to deal with.
Prince, an absolute prince. So I don't trust Arizona either. I think you've got UConn, UNC in there. I think Tennessee will make it because I just continue to watch Purdue, and they're marginally more athletic than in previous years, but they're not that super athletic.
I couldn't get over Rick Barnes, but I wanted to like Tennessee too.
Yeah, no, Rick Barnes is absolutely he's regular season Rick for a reason, and he's got to shake that moniker. But he has Dalton Connect with a chance to do that in a deeper bench, and then Houston, that South bracket, I don't know, it doesn't do a lot for me. If Marquette has the Colette kid back like he's supposed to be, and he's back and good, then I think Marquette can topple Houston and go to the Final Four.
Yeah, Houston's one of my that I think 3 weeks ago I had Houston probably going in there, but
yeah, that's why I don't like conference tournaments to sway my opinion too.
No, it's true.
But Tennessee's exit, you know, is cause for pause. I really like Arizona, but I'm not picking them for many of the same reasons you guys are. UConn, I mean, they're not only extremely talented, but their chemistry is a level that I don't think anybody else approaches on the level of consistency that they do. But I really do like Tennessee. I can't pick Kentucky because
I did. Kentucky was my other one.
And I understand why, because they are playing a lot of good, some very good basketball, but how the hell do you give up 97 points? I mean, what are you doing?
You score 117 like they did on Alabama.
Well, this is a 97-87 loss, but
yeah, they're beautiful on offense. Kentucky is a beautiful offensive team. They're maddening. If you like just watching effort and defense, then they will piss you off. Because they play like an NBA team, and that's what Cal does. But man, they are beautiful scoring the basketball. Sorry,
TJ. I think there's a very good chance that the winner of UConn Auburn, or the team that comes out of there, is the one that wins it. I wouldn't underestimate Houston because they're extremely well coached. Although he's been very frustrated by the way they've been playing, and I like Tennessee. So I'm going to say. I'll narrow it down to say the winner of Auburn UConn, which actually I think is, I just think it's UConn because that teamwork and that chemistry is very rare. Danny Hurley's done an amazing job. All right. Anything else to throw in there, guys? We're going to wrap up. It was a longer Irish Illustrated Insider podcast than normal, but we had a lot to say. Until next time, Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. John Bryce from Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated, and Pete Sampson from The Athletic. Thanks for joining us.